Son of Mine is as good as you're going to get. Now, that's all the way through the audio path with the 6 VGA. There's nothing external. And that's what you were listening to, or you were. And, I, you know, people on social, you know, have said, ah, that sounds really great. But you know what? If you're hearing it, then I got to fix it.
Now, most hams have a tin ear. They don't really hear distortion unless it turns around and bites them in the face. Sorry to say. Why don't you try an experiment? Have you configured the power supply for 115 or 230?
No, it's up to 230, and I'm running 2,700 volts on the plates. You know, it's really actually I swept it, Timmy, and it gets down to about 40 hertz. What happens below 40 hertz, and that's where a lot of my voice comes in with some harmonics, is you get that distortion. Now, I've heard it. And I've recorded it off-air, meaning on this receiver right here on the SDR. I recorded it, and it doesn't have the clean low end. It doesn't have the headroom to go down there. So there's no question I have to... You know, I'm going to try first. What I'm going to do... I'm sorry to bore you guys. What I'm going to do is use a reactor with the mod iron that's in there. The 32 or 34 degree reactor. We'll try that first, and we'll see what happens.
That'll help. My next question, how are you getting 2,700 volts out of the stock plate iron?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's not a stock. Everything in it is stock except for the plate iron, which is a Peter Dahl 2001 version. 2,750 volts, it's in some of the earlier 500s had a string of 5, if you remember, caps. This one has a string of 6, which I put in. The brand new caps. There's not enough, by the way, there's not enough capacitance. That's another problem.
Yep, that's another problem. So, is that the model that requires a full-way bridge? Because I know Peter Dahl made a number of different pieces of plate iron that could be fit inside the cabinet, power supply cabinet of the 500.
Nothing. This is the one they made that fits in the cabinet. In fact, I'll send you a picture. I know you don't look at your... I'll just send a picture of the power supply. And you can see what I've done in there. I try all kinds of things. By the way, I've had it for almost 2 or 3 months and only started putting it on the air. But it wasn't terrible. Now I was talking to a guy out in Illinois prior... before you got on the air, maybe 15 minutes before, and he was running a 500, and it sounded like a stock 500. I mean, you know, at least mine was a little better than that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now, one thing I'm curious about is, you know, those pin or tip jacks that... You know, the umbilical cable between the power supply modulator and the transmitter, did you upgrade those in any way?
Yes, I did. They're BNCs. I changed them to BNCs. And by the way, the modulator is standard regulated at 5 volts. So 2750 at 572s have to be at some bias. So they're standard regulated. Done that. Dave and I... WTVW have been talking back and forth. I've done some other tricks. I mean, it's got 125% module, you know, peaks. Not using what Bill has, the cathode follower. That's another. I could do that. It's not the driver stage. That's clean. I've swept that. That the driver stage is amazing. I'm using a different driver transformer. That's not the problem. The problem is the mod iron. I like to have the East Coast sound. I'm not going to do that unless I get a reactor and some other kind of inductance in there.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what did you do about a driver transformer? What are you using?
To Ferguson. I have the model number. I can't remember, but I had it sitting around. It was up high on the shelf, and I had that for many years. It's a big Ferguson, but it was very thin, and it was tall. So it was able to fit in there just by the seat of its pants.
Was it designed for a single-ended driver tube or push-pull?
Single-ended. And I'll get the model number to you and also write that down. Again, I was looking around. That is not the problem, Timmy. I'm telling you. It's a mod iron.
I know it is. I just want to get a feel for all the other stuff in there. And I'll tell you about my, couple of my, just some of my observances, and then pass the number around. Yep. Well, the stock driver iron is quite small and lightweight, like the modulation transformers. A matter of faggot, Tom ZGC's Ranger crapped out. I put a Viking 2 mod transformer in it, and it died many years later. And the other thing I've, become more and more aware of is the stock driver transformer that's used in the Ranger, which I think is the same thing used in the Viking 1 and Viking 2. Doesn't have enough inductance, and I don't know what the saturation point is. I had a parallel 12BH7 in there, and it seemed to, below about 80 hertz, the low end response just started rolling off. So the driver transformer from the Johnson 500 is the same turns ratio as the driver transformer in the Ranger, and 50% more inductance. It makes a far superior audio driver transformer. So that's where the audio driver transformer and my Junkston 600 wound up, is in Tom's Ranger, and he's back on the air with it, and it's doing very well. But one thing that I have found out, and I had another 500 that I had acquired, it was given to me, had a petered all plate transformer designed for bridge service, and had, I think the full voltage was like 28 or 2900 volts AC. Like a 2300 volt tap and a 2000 volt tap. So you could have a stock plate voltage and a plus amount or a minus amount. Pretty healthy. And whoever had been, who owned the thing, put a large oil condenser in underneath instead of the electrolytics. UTC S22 mod transformer and an S-Series filter reactor. And I pulled the S-22 off because I needed it for another project. I wound up mounting up a Thorderson 500 Waters.
Just like the type that I think you said.
You have a T11M78. Which has its own limitations in the high end, but it's much more of a bulletproof piece of iron.
And just barely fit.
I got rid of the VR tubes. Stuck a pair of 572Bs in there with zero bias, and I bumped the plate voltage down
rather than going up. I went down to the lowest tap, so probably about 1700 volts is on the plate.
So I call it the Junkston 400. As a matter of faggot, I talked to you on that thing, and you convinced me to run a patch cable from my audio chain into the Lionel input, which I put on the thing. So one of the things I found out is that 6B4, when you use a modulation transformer, it's got a more favorable ratio to higher percentage positive peaks. It means the modulator tubes have to make more audio power, so they require more audio drive. And the single-ended 6B4, the way it is, doesn't have the cojones to drive the 572Bs. I wound up yanking the driver transformer out of that one, and I'm using a mod transformer from a Viking 2.
which is mounted on the power supply modulators. And I greatly bumped the voltage up on the 6D4. In the stock setup, there's a 410-ohm wire wound from the low-voltage B-plus rail that supplies B-plus to the plate of the 6B4 and a few other stages. So the 6B4 is always on, and it acts like a part of a resistive voltage divider for some of the lower-level stages. So I moved the B-plus feed to the full low-voltage B-plus, but being that the Viking 2 mod transformer is now mounted on the power supply modulator deck where the low-voltage supply is, I just have a set of relay contacts that, you know, with a transient suppressor resistor capacitor to, you know, kill the B-plus going to the 6B4. And one thing I found out about the 500 is that when you key and unkey, the keying transients just ripping through everything and produce a spike. And the spike will flash the arc gaps across the mod transformer. In the stock 500, they put the arc gaps across the secondary, which is a no-no. They should be across the primary. And people that have these transmitters want to protect the mod transformer by narrowing up the gap. So you narrow up the gap and it flashes more often, but then again, when that gap fires and ionizes, then the mod transformer just behaves for that brief period of time like a center-tapped inductor of fairly low inductance, so high-frequency harmonics from a discharge can build up pretty high peak voltages across the primary and crap the transformer out. Something to be very, very aware of, especially if you're on that kind of voltage. It's a wonder that you haven't blown that transformer up. And for what it is, that's a pretty decent sounding piece of mod iron. But I'd love to know exactly what the turns ratio is on it. A transformer like that shoved into a DX100 or some low power transmitter like that, it would sound very, very nice.
Very, very nice. Yep.
Rather than having it in a position where you might pop the thing.
So I put full plate voltage on the 6B4, which is about 400. And then I think I had about 150-ohm cathode resistor. And then from the voltage divider string off the bias, I picked off, and I think, the same B-plus or bias feed that is used to bias the PA stage. I had an isolation resistor of like maybe 47K and then a 20 microfarad electrolytic to ground, and then that provided DC for the grid of the 6B4, like minus 75. Where you played around with that to get your idle on the 6B4 down to about 40 mils, so you figure about 16 watts. Worth of plate dissipation. And after doing that, all kinds of ick to the kick. Plenty of level. And then during standby, the tube isn't drawing any countrant, not making any heat, not pissing away its life. So there you go. The other thing is appropriate air cooling. Moving air through the cabinet, because as you know, those perforated cabinets that a Junkston uses on their gear, there's a very poor flow of air. So the cabinets just capture the air, and there's a little bit of air infiltration and flow, and they run real hot, especially with a transmitter like the 500. Then the other thing is they have that little pornograph motor underneath
and outboard motor prop blade to suck air through cabinet perforations. So that gets upgraded to a muffin fan that runs quietly, not one of these type. I just shove the chassis back in, and this draw scribe out a 4-inch opening to line up the protective fan grate. I take a magic marker, draw it out, start drilling the blast, and take the saber saw and very carefully cut out a 4-inch diameter hole. Then I get a stack of fender washers and put them under the 4 feet to raise it up about another 3/4 of an inch so that the clearance to your operating table is about an inch. And that greatly improves the airflow. If you're going to run that kind of voltage, you're going to want to move air through it. And then when I acquired the 600, the final thing I did is I have a 6-inch muffin fan. And that's right on the back, right behind where the PA enclosure is. So I very carefully scribed out the opening of the fan on the back of that, on the back panel of the PA compartment. And then I very carefully unscrewed it and removed it. I made a cutout. I had to have some ribs in there or whatever to support various things or whatever, I forget. But I made a cutout there. So that is in the exhaust mode. So from underneath, I'm blowing air in, and from out the back, I'm sucking the heat out. And it runs much, much cooler, and in theory, I figured, that'll fix the VFO drift. But it didn't really. It helped it. But it helps the life expectancy of everything else. And that is very important. Yeah, the 810s are a good idea, and the Gates iron, boy, that'll be kick-ass. You should have your own audio system and not even bother with the internal single-ended 6B4, because that'll fall flat on its face. Just won't have the car yawnies to do the job. Anyway, I'd be very curious to hear what your end results are going to be, because the 2750, you should be getting a good 500 watts out of it. So, anyway, I know Bill has his version of the Junkston 600, so essentially that's what you have, Jeff, is a Junkston 600. Go ahead, Bill. IFR from WA1H Yellow.
All right, Timmy. I heard somebody in there.
Sounded like Yogi Bear. I think you guys pretty much know what I have here. I'll just give you a quick rundown. First of all, the plate transformer in this thing is the biggest one that Peter Dahl made. It was called the X version because it had to be externally mounted. This thing gives me about 2,400 volts at 800 mils. And right now I'm loaded up to about 260 mils of cathode current. And the RF output is 500 watts right now. 500 watts. And using a pair of 572Bs. Into a Peter Dahl modulation transformer, right, Tim? And this, when I bought the damn thing, this Peter Dahl modulation transformer was, I guess, from what I understand, built for the same specs as the original. And that's what I'm running. And, but everything else has been changed. Using a pair of 572Bs, and driving around with a circuit that Guy made, which is a pair of 6L6s, triode connected, cathode followers. That's what I'm driving those 572Bs with. And audio processing, microphone, RE27 into a little Alto S8 mixer. That goes into a Rain PEQ55, which is a 10-band parametric EQ, Tim. And that goes into a Inovonics 222 processor. And anyway, Tim, I love the way this sounds. I'm not necessarily looking for hi-fi. I got over that hi-fi crap. I don't want to be 9,000.
Yeah.
I got a couple of recordings from some folks the other day. Jimmy, and I love the way this thing sounds, Tim. I absolutely love the way this Junction 600 sounds. And I think it works. I think it works really well. Anyway. And I'm not going to do anything else to it. I just like it just the way it is. The only problem I've had with this thing, Timmy, I think I talked to you about that about 2 years ago. I lost a coupling capacitor between the driver and the 4400. And replaced that and fixed the problem. So, anyway, Tim, I just love this thing, Timmy. So, Tim, let me know. How do you think it sounds? WAWXLR in the group, KC2IFI.
Yeah, somebody in there sounded like shit. It doesn't sound as good as your 41,000 rig, but it sounds good. What can I say? What can I say? It doesn't go to me. Been bogarting it. Dave's in here. And Bob and... of course, Jeff, so... I'm going to fall by the wayside and just monitor.
All right, Tim. Let these other guys make a comment or two. Then I got some food questions for you. Over.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll be here.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot. Yeah, you were talking to Timmy a few minutes ago, but again, you don't have much audio. It's kind of, you got a nice carrier. Big carrier, 10-over carrier here, but not much audio. You know, my other transmitter is a 4-1000, modulated by a pair of 833s, but right now that's off the air, not because it's not working, but because I've got to make some adjustments on it. Over.
Thanks for coming back to the CQ. W2NBC.
Listen, if you got a chance, my email is correct, I'm sure it's good. Rob, send me an email if you could, please, over.
Uh, Okay, yeah, I'll look you up. That sounds great. Yeah, and she was that, I didn't know if you had that on there. I'll send it out.
Yeah, have a good night there, Bob.
All right, Bob, nice talking to you.
Nice, really, really nice talking. We haven't talked to us that much, but
anyway, Jeffy, go ahead.
Jeffy, do something here. Jerry, just checking. Yeah, this one has no distortion.
Yeah,
it's a very good bill. Yeah, the 500 sounds great. It sounds very nice. I think you have the de-esser on or whatever. Yeah, it's narrowed a bit, but it's got nice sound to it, and it's got a distinctive sound, you know. So I can always tell when you're on that transmitter, as opposed to the big boy. But to me, it's very interesting and all that stuff. And I'm not going to get into a whole long thing here. You and I should go somewhere, as you said, and talk about it. There's a whole bunch of things. What I found, first of all, the capacitance, as we talked about, is just much too low. It's a 16 point something. It's like 17 UF. It's just ridiculously low. It needs to be around 30 or 40, at least, in my opinion. And that'll be an interesting challenge, although there's space to, you know, kind of parallel them up in there. So that'll be another step. But I think the first step, as I said to you, is using a reactor with the standard modulation transformer, because the one in there now, you know, there's distortion, as I assume you talked about. Now, I'm not hearing it myself, and normally I'm pretty good with that. Not this transformer. I'm talking about the other one. Not hearing that low-end problem you're hearing. In fact, it sounds to me, listening to myself, fairly tight, but doesn't have... It really starts bottoming out at around 40 hertz. I mean, you know, and at 40 hertz, even that is a little crunchy. So really, it's a good 60 to, high-end is fine. Don't know what the turns ratio is. I'd like to know. That's interesting too, but I'm going to try taking the DC off the mod iron. That might be interesting. And then I'm starting to think, Tim, I'm going to ask you one question, which I don't, I haven't asked for a while, but now I have a reactor, that BC1T reactor, not the one that's in the DC610, which by the way is working. It's another one. It got wet. And, you know, we're talking about really wet. So, my question to you is, how do I bake that? I can't really, there's no real way except maybe high-potting it, but how do I get the internals, baked out on a reactor, Tim?
Well, you know what you do is you just come off the AC line, your 120 volts, with a rectifier diode. A beer can electrolytic is a filter cap. You could do a bridge if you wanted. It doesn't matter. And depends on what the DC resistance is. It's just impress an appropriate amount of DC current across the windings that'll cause the thing to heat up. And then bake it out.
Yeah, but with, I thought about that, and, yeah, I could do that. I don't need necessarily, I have some supplies I can use with the appropriate load on the other end. I think it's a 40 ohm, maybe 75, I don't know what it was. Anyway, I'll figure it out. The first thing I'm going to do with that thing is bring it up, believe it or not, and Dawn doesn't know about this yet, and use the actual... oven, and let it sit there at like 140 degrees, and let it bake for a day. That's happening.
That'll work too.
And then there is what I call the climatization process that I've done. When I fixed up Tom's Ranger, one thing I've been doing, on other transformers, especially little audio interstages that over the years the weather can get, or just in the environment can get to them, and then they tend to open up, or they short, or arc to ground, is I would heat them up. I'd get them good and hot, you know, either bake them in an oven, or my thing that I had been doing is in the summer months is put them in the window on the dash of the Nova and let them bake in the sun, and the windows rolled up, and then when that transformer's been baking for a day and it's good and hot, then I'll just dunk the thing in a little can of clear polyurethane varnish and let it cool down and sit there for the night and soak in the whole night, and then I'll stick it on a little sheet of cardboard under the windshield on the dash and just let it bake. Let it bake for a day. I'll have to give it another dunking. That'll tend to seal them up, but there still are pockets of air and maybe a little bit of moisture in there to a point. Well, by baking, it pretty well drives the moisture out. Then I had a conversation with Gary WZ1M, who rewinds and rebuilds transformers here in Maine. And he vacuum seals his coils. Now, what he does is he just has an old pressure cooker. And then he has some kind of sealant. I guess he has used polyurethane cut with, I guess, xylene to thin it out. And he'll stick a vacuum pump on the pressure cooker, using it as a vacuum chamber, and suck out the air. And he'll let it sit there for a while, and the bath of polyurethane, and then you release it to the air, and then the air pressure comes back up to one atmosphere, and it'll drive the polyurethane into the little nooks and crannies that the air had been pretty much evacuated from. So I went down to a thrift store in town, and I found a pressure cooker. The price was right. It was a good-sized one, and I have a vacuum pump. So I've been treating a number of transformers that way. On something as large as a modulation reactor, you need a larger chamber. But that'd be the ultimate. Would be if you could vacuum seal it. Maybe one thing you might do is check out some of these motory ones. It's got a lot greater accessibility to than I would around your area in Jersey or New York. And just have them put the thing in a vacuum tank and dunk it in the appropriate varnish enamel, and just let it suck in. And when that stuff hardens up, seals up, moisture's not going to get to it. It's like I treated the I had a Stancor E3893, an old Buzzard line 60 watt mod transformer that's in Tom's Ranger. And I treated that thing several times, and it'd be good to do it to a modulation reactor, because a modulation reactor is like mud transformers that handle DC talk back, and you get acoustic feedback, which is most annoying. But once you climatize it and seal it with polyurethane, and that stuff sets up, then it totally quiets the transformer as well, or the reactor as well.
Yeah, well, actually, the one I have in the 610 never talked back, of course. In fact, it still doesn't, even after being underwater. That thing, it's open core, right? You know, we're talking about open spring transformer, and, you know, you got some paper involved. You know what I'm saying? That outer lace of paper and stuff. So I think the first time I'm going to bake it out. Then I'm going to put some voltage through it, like you said. And yeah, I might do that myself. There are some. That might be something to invest in because of all the other projects.
And by the way,
the big project, the kilowatt desk is still on the burner, so that'll be next. Because you know, that whole power supply was built. The modulator was half built when that thing got flooded out, and now all the pieces are around there, Timmy. It's just horrible. You walk down in that area that was so pristine that you saw, and stuff is strewn all over the place with all the baseboard cut up, you know, to about 6 feet. It's like World War III.
Oh yeah. Hey, did you contact my friend that's got that Chungston kilowatt modified compass?
No, I'm gonna do that. I will do that. I promise you, I'll do that. I don't know if he still has it, but yes, I will. I've just been so busy.
Yeah, he still has it. He was wondering when I talked to him last. I said, "Well, I don't know."
All right. Yes, I have the information. You sent it to him. Thank you for that. Anyway, I'm going to go. But the A10s is a great idea too. But let me just try. And you think? And last thing, sorry, Bill, and guys listening. I think Dave is still in there too. The first experiment is just using the reactor with this iron. That might be interesting. It might make a lot of the distortion go away.
Well. I have another experiment you might try along with that.
What? Talking about using a reactor with the 500?
Yeah, Bill. Now, you know, I have the 500 on today. It sounds different than it was when you were. It sounds better. But it still has a little bit of distortion in the low end. Probably around 60 to 80 hertz. It sounds like the low frequency kind of cross-module. It's that crossover distortion. What, Timmy? What were you going to say?
Well, being that you're running it on 230, what you might try is tie one side of the 230-volt feed to the plate transformer to ground neutral and half-voltage things and put a JS clip lead short on the mark bias and run things at half-voltage. And you back your grid current down to maybe 10 mils and load the final up to about 150. You get about 100 watts out. It'll be like that of a DX100. And then play around with it. And you'll find it'll sound tremendous. Because now you're not requiring a lot out of the mod transformer. Well, that's the thing, you know. That mod transformer doesn't have that much core mass to it. Plus, it's handling unbalanced DC. You know, I've noticed the same thing with, you know, the earlier experiments with done-up Jungston Rangers that are all RC-coupled, pair of 6550s, but still a stock mod transformer. The deep low end sounds grunty, and I don't even see how you can make 40 hertz. I was going to say the stock iron is probably good down to about 80 or 100 before it begins to get weird.
No. This one, I swept it. And it was consistently good. In fact, it got down to about 30 hertz before it was like about 3 dB, 4 dB down. Now, you know, but still, it sounds fairly stable. Now, I swept it. You know, I know how to do that. And so there's something with... If not for that, I mean, the mod iron is definitely wimpy. But I think if I take the DC off of it, I think it will make a big difference. So I'm going to try that first. And yes, look, at 100 watts, yeah, it would work great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, definitely, if you took the DC off of it, it'll be much better. Much, much better. But it won't be equal to the... you know, the kilowatt iron out of the gates 1T or whatever. And the pair of 810s, yep. I don't know. Hopefully you'd kind of follow in the footsteps with the Capital Fire audio driver. Steam the gates used.
and wrap the negative feedback around it, and boy, that'd be a sweet sound on a 500 or 600. Anyway, that's what I wanted to impart on you, you know. But you can just do that for shits and grins. Just drop the power and listen to it, just to check it out. Try the stock iron with the modulation reactor, just to see what it does. Document it, make notes, the whole thing. Anyway, that story, I'm just going to fall to the back of the bus for a bit.
Hey, Timmy.
Yeah?
All right, I got a food question for you. Let me turn it back over to Jeff real quick. But also, before I turn it to Jeff, I'm using, this is my 600 with a Peterdahl mod transformer. I know the low end is not all that great, but is there distortion in the low end on this thing, Timmy? Or?
I don't notice it. Well, there's just like a, I wouldn't say a lack, there's not as much. There is no what I would call real deep low end, but it's very acceptable.
Well, you know, it's like listening to you. Tim, your audio is very good, but your audio has what I like to call bite. It's got AM bite. And if I was listening to you as a DX station, Timmy, Jeff sounds good. No, don't get me wrong. Jeff sounds good, but his audio is too smooth.
If I was listening to Jeff or you as a DX station, low signal levels, Timmy, you would come through real good. And I wonder why that is.
Just the differences in our voices, you know. Yeah, I do, a lot of it is in the EQ, and I would say of all my transmitters, the Scout probably has almost the best frequency response of any of the transmitters I've got, except for the Valiant when it's in the screen modulated mode. And what was your tube question?
All right, this is going to be a little lengthy. Are you ready?
Not as ready as I am at 8 minutes after 12 midnight.
Actually, 12:06. All right, listen. I'm in the process of converting a linear amplifier that I bought about 5 years ago, and a pair of 4400s. With a huge power supply. And, God, I want 4400s. I'm converting it to a GS-35 Russian tube. My question is, a lot of tubes, Timmy. 4400s, 4-1000s, other high power, is reasonably high power amplifier tubes have high current filament voltages. The GS-35 only requires 12.6 volts at about 3 amps. But again, it is an indirectly heated cathode. Indirectly heated cathode. And that thing has about 2,500 watts of plate dissipation. The other question number one is, the cathode, indirectly heated, is tied to the filaments. It does not have a separate connection. It's tied to the filaments. I don't understand why that is. But most high-power amplifier tubes that I'm familiar with, Tim, run fairly low filament voltages at high currents. This tube does not. And the A tube, the only tube that I'm familiar with that ran extremely high currents is when I was in the military, I worked on a low-frequency radar system. And that ran a triode, it was a huge triode tube, and this radar, Timmy, obviously, it was pulsed. Output was 5 megawatts PEP. I repeat, 5 million watts PEP. And the filament voltage on that little puppy was 2.5 volts at 600 amps. My question is, with the GS35, again, indirectly heated cathode, and the cathode is tied to the filament, which I don't understand, why is the filament current so low? Herbert?
Well, you know, it's a number of factors. I don't know about that mofo tube with a 2.5 volt, 600 amp filament, but, and I don't want to keep it here much longer. There were some others breaking in. I want to get to bed. I got to get to bed. But basically, the 41,000, 4400, and all those tubes are all fluorinated tungsten directly heated cathodes. Or filaments, cathode, electron emitters. The GS35 is an indirectly heated cathode. Such tubes that I know you're familiar with is the 4CX1500B. That's the same idea. The 8877. The 3CX800. And iMac came out with a whole family of tubes. The 4CX, or rather the 3CX5000A7. A 3CX10000B7, and then a 4CX15 or 3CX15000B7. That all were indirectly heated. The 3CX15000 was 15 volts at 15 amps, or only 225 watts. Then the iMac introduced a special version used in MRI equipment that's known as a YC-156, which basically was the 3CX-5000 anode with the guts of the 3CX-15000. And these tubes, boasted very high peak Siemens emission. But they all were very low grid dissipation, so you have to be careful, or you'd crap the tube out. That's the thing, grid dissipation. Same thing with the GS35, so I understand. Yeah, from talking with Brent, he was telling me about the design of the cathode, where it's not a radially designed cathode, where it's like a cylinder with a grid structure around it. It's basically more of a planar type design. It's probably like that of, like, say you took a golf ball and sliced off part of the, you know, say you sliced off a quarter of it or a third of it. In other words, It's like that of a bowl or a sphere. And the grid the same way. And the plate the same way. Connected, you know, the plate structure's attached to the external anode copper radiator, which is very heavy. But it's a completely different mentality, so probably the Russians maybe pioneered the scenario to get the maximum amount of emission for a given type of cathode structure. Now, the cathode being tied off to one side of the filament is common practice with certain tubes. So, you know, it's just, you know, you drive the RF, you pump the RF in there. And then a cap to the other side of the filament just to make sure that there is no differential RF voltage across the filament. And that's the name of that tune. So, the other difference is that 4400s and 41000s, 31000s, 3CX1200s, all thorium to tungsten filament tubes are very forgiving in terms of accidental piss beating without killing the tube. The oxide-coated types, like the 4CX1500B, 8877, 3CX800, they're all high-gain, fragile grid structure, and they're delicate. You can blow them up if you're not careful. You can't get something for nothing. So on that note, I'm going to bail out of here. Good being in here this evening. I'll just be listening out, but I must get the bed. See you all later. This is WA1H and YLR.
All right, Jimmy. Okay, before you run, I just want to say one thing about the GS35. Every spec I've looked at the GS35, they do not give you a definite value of grid current. What they say is the grid current will be one-third of the plate current. Well, I guess I bored him right to tears. Anyway, guys, thanks a lot.
Enjoyed it. Timmy, enjoyed it.
All you guys, Jeffy.
Especially like talking to you, Jeff.
I'm interested to see how you're going to make out with your Junction 500. Man, Jeffy, I love this transmitter, my little Junction 500, Jeff.
I love it to tears.
Absolutely love it to tears.
I'll catch you guys later. Thanks, guys. Kilowatt Charlie 2,
India, Foxpot Radio is now clear. Bye.